Today's Trial Run podcast. We got Antonio Brown back in the news for the third straight week. Jalen Ramsey wants out of Jacksonville. Lamar Jackson setting the world on fire. The MLB postseason is fast approaching. And college football, we got a hot take from Brennan on Clemson football. Can't wait to hear it. That is all coming up on today's Trial Run podcast. We beat Antonio Brown to death so far this year. This is the third straight time we're leading off a show with him. So let's just not do that today. Can we just please agree to not talk about Antonio Brown for at least the first 5 minutes of the show?
Yeah, for real.
And instead, I want to talk about a far more pressing issue, something that you just brought to my attention that you believe that I personally could not disagree with more. Right before this show, as we're sitting here prepping, this is what we do for prep work. This is what passes for prep work for this podcast. We were sitting here talking about restaurants here in our beautiful town of Mount Pleasant, Michigan, and you brought up the point that you believe that Olive Garden is considered a fancy restaurant. I want you to explain that to the audience for them.
That's not entirely correct. So I was actually just beginning to explain this to Nate. I have restaurants on a three-tiered system. So there's fast food, there's your Joe Schmo regular restaurant,
which would be
like a Texas Roadhouse.
Okay.
And then you have your fancy restaurants, you know, your Ruth Chris's, that type of caliber.
I wish I knew what you're talking about. I have no idea what that is.
That's terrible. Anyway, that's because you're from the UP. You don't know anything. You don't know culture. Regardless, I would put Olive Garden. This is only the second time I've ever been there. I went there this evening, and I was pleasantly surprised. I would put it in between the second and the third category. That's all I was trying to say. It was higher quality than I was expecting.
So you're putting them somewhere between a place where you could order like $100 steak and like a Red Lobster. Is that somewhere in between there?
Correct.
Are you sure you want to double down on that?
I do want to double down on that. And really, honestly, the most impressive thing to me is how fast and orderly their service.
Oh, their soups hit hard. You got the salad.
I did get the salad.
That is tragic because you missed out on their soups, which are on a different level.
Well, you are a slut for soups for some reason.
Let me tell you this right now. Let me break it down for you. I want to give you the Upper Peninsula of Michigan tiers of restaurants, if you want to call it that. You got your tier three. You got your McDonald's. You got your Burger King. That's in every small town outside of the tiny towns that are basically non-existent, unincorporated. And then you got your tier two restaurants. You got your Culver's, you got your
pasties.
You got your Culver's, you got anywhere that serves a pasty. You got all kinds of stuff. You got Border Grill, restaurants that you probably never heard of. And then if you want to get real fancy, if you want to take the family out to a nice festivity, perhaps somebody's getting married.
A nice Cracker Barrel.
Something like that. I mean, if you really want to splurge, you go to a Red Lobster. You go to something along those lines. I mean, I'm talking Red Lobster. You go to a Hudson's, if you knew what that was. It's all fantastic. That's upper echelon stuff right there. You've never seen that kind of luxury before.
For the viewers at home, could you imagine living in that kind of squalor?
That's fantastic. You don't know the half of it. It's awesome.
No offense to the Magnusons, because I love your place, but that is absurd.
All right. Well, we've officially filibustered enough. It's time to talk about real news. We got Antonio Brown, hopefully gone for the last time, so we don't have to ever talk about him again. He got released from the New England Patriots today, and I believe Adam Schefter tweeted this out. That's usually a kiss of death for most people. If you get released from the Patriots, that's usually like your last chance in the league. So in all reality, Antonio Brown might be done with his career. That's kind of odd to say, considering he's
on the upper echelon of wide receivers.
I mean, he's one of those guys that has just made a difference and impact since pretty much the moment he stepped in the league. He was a fan favorite, was he not? He was one of those guys where it seemed like everybody liked him. He was a little bit quirky, kind of out there. And now, after everything that's been released, we see that he's clearly got some mental issues going on or something along those lines. And after all that, he gets released from the Steelers, traded to the Raiders, and then released from the Raiders, released by the Patriots. Is there a fourth chance for this guy? Because I personally don't see it happening.
I don't even know if there is. I mean, I'm sure some desperate team will pick him up, but have we ever seen an instance ever of a player who, from their personality alone, just who they are as a person, boot themselves out of the NFL like this, or really any sport? Like, he is one of the premier players in the NFL, and simply because of who he is, no one wants him anymore. I've never seen this.
Is it okay to compare that with a Kaepernick type situation, because that's not necessarily who Kaepernick
is. That's a fair comparison. I did not even think about that.
But
that
Kaepernick, a Kaepernick-esque with his beliefs alone, like he got kicked out of the league. So if you want to compare it to that, it's clearly a very, very,
very different,
yeah, circumstances, in that Antonio Brown is just an absolute, I mean, he's got nothing going on between the ears, but Colin Kaepernick, you know, he's doing it for social issues, if you want to call it that. But regardless, he still worked himself out of the league just as Antonio Brown did.
Yeah, that was a good comparison. I didn't even think about that one.
Have we ever seen this amount of young talent leave the league this quickly? Because this is – I know this hasn't happened yet, but people talking about Cam Newton potentially retiring after another, I mean, flurry of injuries.
He's sitting out this week.
Sitting out this week. We got Andrew Luck retiring. Drew Brees is, I mean, he's not young, but
he's likely, young at heart.
He's young at heart. He's likely on the downslope of his career, just about to head out. I'm a head out after breaking his hand on Aaron Donald's helmet or hand or whatever it was. And now we got a guy like Antonio Brown getting worked out of the league. We lost Colin Kaepernick a couple of years ago. Everything that's happened, this level of young talent. And I don't know if you saw the Calvin Johnson story that happened today also, with him finally coming out and speaking about his exit from the Lions a little bit. Expressing his displeasure with the fact that they did not let him keep his signing bonus, the fact that he chose to smoke marijuana instead of take opiates after every game. It's just one of those things where you look back at it from a fan's perspective and you're thinking, what could have been? Because that is that's an unreal player and an unreal level of talent that's being removed from the league. And we're seeing it all across the league now. It's incredible.
The only thing I heard from that story was that marijuana part of it, because someone from my previous life in East Grand Rapids, who will remain nameless, posted on their story and said, "My man, hell yeah." That just shows you the character that we have in East Grand Rapids.
It just makes – I guess I'm not going to even blame Calvin Johnson for that, because with the level of opiates and all this stuff that is being shoveled into the athletes' mouths in NFL locker rooms, there's no way that – I mean, marijuana can be even worse than that, because that has to be terrible, that level of chemical going into your body.
We don't know the half of what
those guys do. No, we have no idea. I don't think those guys do either, which is the scary part.
The NFL's cracking down on marijuana and drugs and things of that nature. It's slipping up a little bit more as the years go by, but the fact remains that they are still hard-pressed on marijuana. But then, like you said, they're
– In the same breath.
In the same breath, exactly. They're giving them – they're shoveling them these drugs, you know.
Opiates, I believe, in Calvin Johnson's statement, he referenced, like, Percocets. He referenced, I believe I don't know what the other major one is, but it was an Oxycontin, I think it was. Those two, which are
you know your drugs.
Pretty heavy hitting stuff. So that's stuff that you don't want to mess around with, and it's a little bit unreal. I want everybody to take this with a grain of salt, though, because Calvin Johnson has entered the marijuana business after leaving football. So there's a very good chance that this was all done as a publicity stunt, but it's something that we have to consider at the very least. And speaking of people wanting out of certain places, we've seen it with Antonio Brown about three times already.
A beautiful transition there.
We've got Jalen Ramsey forcing his way out of Jacksonville. Did anybody see this coming? Because this seems like kind of an issue where everybody saw that him and Doug Marrone, the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, got into it last week on the sideline. And then it seemed like overnight, Jalen Ramsey decided that he wanted out of Jacksonville altogether. Is this too quick of a trigger on Jalen Ramsey's part? Or do you think this is something that's been brewing for a while?
I mean, we don't know exactly what was said in that exchange, and we don't know what had been brewing, like you said before. But, I mean, we were all just watching the game. We saw the exchange between Marrone and Jalen Ramsey, and at least from my view, I saw it, and I was like, oh, that doesn't look good. But I kind of pushed it to the back of my mind.
What happens on NFL sidelines
more
than you think.
Yeah. Right, exactly. I just kind of pushed it to the back of my mind. It was just an argument. And then out of nowhere the next day, Jalen Ramsey requests a trade. And you have to think that those two things are related. That had to be either the final straw of something that had been brewing for a long time, or just something so terrible occurred on that sideline that Jalen Ramsey wanted out.
And there has been a list that's come out of potential teams, potential suitors for him. I believe the Eagles were at the top of that list. Might have been the Chiefs also.
I've seen the Ravens.
Ravens were thrown in there. But it's interesting to think, because the Jacksonville Jaguars have no leverage in this trade deal at all while negotiating a trade. I heard that they wanted two first-round picks for Jalen Ramsey, which he's a tremendous talent. But when you have no leverage, what kind of trade package can they reasonably expect from other NFL teams?
The only way they're ever going to get leverage is if some team offers – If some team is willing to trade two first-round picks or whatever they want, and some other team isn't willing to do that, then the
you can try to work the price.
Right,
up,
you can try to work it between those two. But yeah, if no one's going to go for that, then the Jaguars really don't have any leverage.
I mean, everybody's seen it too. The Jaguars tried to basically manufacture leverage by saying, yeah, we're not looking to trade Jalen Ramsey, which is complete crock. Everybody knows that they're shopping him, but they say, yeah, we're not really planning on trading Jalen Ramsey right now. What are you going to do? You're not just going to hold him there for – you're not going to hold him hostage for the rest of his contract. That's just not going to happen.
Right.
We also saw that the Miami Dolphins players, everybody wanting out, with all these players wanting out and getting out, Antonio Brown, Minkah Fitzpatrick from the Dolphins, among others from that Dolphins franchise, which is a complete train wreck right now. We see Jalen Ramsey shifting. We see everything happening around the league. There are so many young players being shifted across all, like across the board, across the entire NFL right now. We usually see this with, you know, playoff contention teams who are looking to gain a few more pieces, but it's happening all over the map, and I've never seen anything like
I've never seen it. I've never seen this early in the season so many moves just shifting from team to team. I mean, Antonio Brown's not necessarily one of those young talents, but he's another guy that's, you know, been released, gone across to different teams. This is something that usually happens, like you said, in crunch time after the trade deadline, sometime when, you know, teams are making a playoff push, not week one, week two of the NFL season. It's really bizarre to see.
With that being said, shifting back to Jalen Ramsey a bit, where do you think of the list of potential suitors, where do you think the best chance he's going to end up?
I think that you could see the Ravens. I also think the Texans are in that mix. I think he would fit well. And then, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. I think Adam Schefter the other day said that an AFC team and an NFC team are leading the push. He didn't mention names, but
yeah, the NFC team would presumably be the Eagles.
Right, so that's basically as vague as you can get with it. It's going to be interesting. The Lions, can the Lions get him?
Absolutely not.
I'd love to see it. Come on, Lions. Really, do something right.
That's not really the Patriot way, is it? Which is what the Lions are trying to implement. Bringing in a guy who's gonna waste assets, you're going to ship out two first-round picks, and the Patriot way is to hoard all of those picks and eventually, you know, flip them for cheap veteran guys. That's just the way that they go about it. So Jalen Ramsey's going to want a big new contract, and they're going to have to go with assets for him. I just can't see that working out within the Patriot way at all.
But a man can dream.
A man can dream, absolutely. Can you imagine him and Big Play Slay on the same defense?
Ooh.
Oh, my goodness. Lots of stuff happening across the NFL. We've seen the Lamar Jackson resurgence, the explosion. Not even a resurgence, because he had a pretty healthy rookie season last year. But also, when most guys go into their sophomore slump, he has been absolutely lighting it up. He's been doing everything correctly, it seems, although they have played the Cardinals, and I forget who they played week one, but it wasn't anybody stellar.
No.
He's done it against essentially nobody teams. But regardless, you have to respect what he's doing. And you have listed in our notes here, in our show notes, Lamar Jackson versus Patrick Mahomes. And I want you to explain yourself why you thought this was necessary to put this down, because I think there's a pretty clear answer to this competition.
Well, it's just that's the matchup this week. We got Chiefs-Ravens, and you know, it's going to be the test of the quarterbacks. Everyone said that Lamar Jackson was a running back throughout the whole offseason, a running back who had a cannon arm but wasn't accurate at all, and he's proven the haters wrong, at least to this point. So it's going to be the real test.
When I first read this, I thought you wanted to compare quarterbacks. So I want you to take the Lamar Jackson side of the argument, and I'll take the Patrick Mahomes side of the argument, and we'll see who wins.
I mean, that wasn't where I was going with this take, but realistically, like, what
happens? Don't do this. I'm
positing this. What happens if Lamar Jackson outperforms Pat Mahomes this week?
This in a one week sample size?
I'm not saying
how Lamar Jackson throw 50 touchdowns and win an MVP.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's correct. What do you think the reaction will be in the NFL and the fan bases this week if Lamar Jackson outperforms Pat Mahomes?
I don't think there will be one.
You don't think so?
I honestly think that the general consensus is that Patrick Mahomes is so far ahead of everybody else in the league, especially a guy like Lamar Jackson, who, despite putting up good numbers right now, is still questionable in the minds of many as a passer. So I don't think it's going to mean anything at all. I think, if anything, it's going to be, a moderate, hey, look at what Lamar did. He showed up against a quality opponent. But outside of that, I don't think that's going to be any indictment on Pat Mahomes at all.
Well, how about this? If Lamar Jackson does show up this week and he plays admirably, are you willing to put the Lamar Jackson isn't a good quarterback sayings to rest?
Well, I mean, I was never one to say Lamar
Jackson's
not a good quarterback.
Right, but would you be willing to finally say, do you think the people in the NFL would be willing to say?
I think I would be, but it's not necessarily based on a one-week sample. I just want to see him do it against a good team.
I mean, the Chiefs are a good team.
That's what I'm saying. If Lamar Jackson does it against a good team, but the problem is he's going to have to do it consistently against good teams over the course of a season.
Correct, but at a certain point, you just have to say, okay, this guy's a good quarterback.
I think
this week, if he can show that, you know, he's a very high-profile type guy, he's done it week one, week two, now week three against a good team. I don't know how much more he can prove. Obviously, if he, you know, disappoints throughout the rest of the season, then we know. But at least at this point, you've got to say that the guy's a good quarterback.
Yeah, I agree, but I want to wait until the end of the season. If he can string together a season like he had last year and then a season like he seems to be putting together this year, that's a pretty good case for telling people, hey, look, I'm not just a running back playing quarterback. I'm a guy that can actually throw the ball, command an offense, and be successful in the NFL.
I don't know why. I have no ties with Lamar Jackson, but I really want him to be successful.
That doesn't make any sense.
I just want him to be successful.
Why, though?
It's just a gut feeling I have. I don't know.
Is he on your fantasy team or something?
No. Some players, you know, like Steph Curry's, I don't want them to be successful. Lamar Jackson's of the world, I do want to be successful. I don't know what it is.
You don't want to get into this with me. Do you want to have the Curry argument again? Have we had it on the show before?
I mean, who could say? Probably. Yeah, we talked about the Warriors before.
I mean, we've been taking a bit of a hiatus from NBA talk. You wanted to slip this in here before we start talking about... It appears that we're going to be talking about fantasy football and Major League Baseball. Do you want to slip this in here really quick?
I'd love to.
Steph Curry, I mean, give me your opinion, please, so I can refute it.
Oh, he's a great player. I can't stand the man.
Why, though?
He's – you know, actually, this is a great thing. We can slip in some CMU education into this. In our English class the other day, we are taking a literary interpretation of sport class. In our English class, we were talking about athletes who fit that mold of, you know, your typical athlete, the, you know, the big, strong, powerful guy.
LeBron James type. Yeah.
Right. And Steph Curry is the antithesis of that. He's completely the opposite. And I don't know if that is directly related to why I dislike him. I just think he's kind of like a punk. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know what it is. Like,
because most sane human beings, they would like a good underdog story and like somebody who doesn't have the athletic frame and goes in there and makes a career for himself.
You know, I think that if he played on a team, if he was like the scrappy type who was on a team that, you know, had no talent around it, I think I would like him. But it's just the fact that he's on the Warriors and he has so many...
He created the Warriors. He's the one who created the Warriors. He made them. You're going to knock him for making them?
I think he was part of the process. I don't think he's the sole creator of the Warriors.
He's a two-time MVP.
I'm just saying.
All due respect to guys like Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. But
Klay Thompson, that's a man I love.
He's like, I love him too.
I love Klay Thompson.
You're telling me that, are you here to tell me that the catalyst of that team, the person who made that team go, was like Klay Thompson and not Steph Curry? Is that the point you want to make?
No. Steph Curry was the face of that franchise, still is, but he wouldn't have been able to do that without the weapons around him. I'll just say that.
Can't we just say the same thing about everybody, though? Can't we say that about Draymond? Can't we say that about Klay Thompson?
Kawhi Leonard?
I mean, Kawhi
Leonard.
He did
it basically alone.
He did it alone with Toronto, yeah. I guess a depleted Warriors team.
And he destroyed the Warriors. The Milwaukee Bucks by himself.
This is going to go down a wormhole here that I don't necessarily want to go down with. The Milwaukee Bucks have Giannis and then a bunch of nice pieces. They're not a team. They're not just this world beater franchise that I want to hear you bring into an argument.
How did we get here?
I don't know, but I'm enjoying having the conversation with you, but I think you're wrong in every facet of this argument.
All right, well. We'll let the people at home decide.
All right, so I won. So we go into fantasy football. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I just made some trades this week in our league. And
for a guy who says he doesn't like to trade much, you should have been trading a whole lot.
I only traded twice. Two trades, that's all I've done this entire season.
We did players to watch for last week. Do you want to do it again?
I mean, it's up to you. What do you think? Do you have any players that you want to watch for?
No. Does that answer your question?
To be honest, neither do I.
Oh, who's that one running back from the 49ers? Give me a second.
Raheem Mostert or whatever?
Mostert. I have him on my bench. He put up some nice numbers last week. I've gotten some trade offers for him, some inquiries.
I think I completely butchered that man's name. But
It's close enough. Anyway, he put up a nice week last week. Something to watch for. There you go.
Peyton Barber. That's another name.
Never heard of her.
Oh, Rex Burkhead's been pretty consistent. I picked him up off the waivers.
Look at you. Just making money moves constantly.
I'm the king of the waivers. See, I don't trade a lot, but I am the king of the waivers. Chris Conley, ooh, that's a guy. That guy came out of nowhere. He's put up back-to-back weeks that have been pretty good. He's a receiver for the Jacksonville Jaguars, so I'm excited to see where that man goes.
I can't think of a least interesting thing to talk, or less interesting thing to talk about than our own fantasy football teams that nobody cares about.
All right, then move on.
All right, baseball. That might be less.
Yeah, I was about to say
that might actually be less interesting, to be honest with you. But at the very least, the postseason is approaching. So if you're not a big fan of the 162 game sample size, you get it narrowed down to one game for the wild card, five for the AL and NLDS, seven games for the ALCS, NLCS, and World Series. So it's a nice, small, crunched-up version if you want to watch some quality baseball. We've got some teams that have already clinched: Dodgers, Astros, Yankees, Braves, all locked into the playoffs. We've got a very heated wild card race in the NL. The Brewers pushing right now. St. Louis Cardinals trying to hold on to the NL Central. Lots of stuff going on there. The Red Sox are officially out.
That's kind of crazy.
Which is kind of bizarre given that they're coming off a season like they did with talent that basically went nowhere. They kept pretty much – they returned almost their entire roster, and we see them not even making the postseason. Who do you like to win it all? I mean, the safe pick would be one of these teams that has already clinched, but if you want to say like the Tigers or somebody, just feel free and go ahead.
You know what? I'm going to go with out of this list, since I don't really watch baseball, I'm going to go with the Astros simply because I like Justin Verlander. So that's
that's just top level analysis.
That's right, a pick to trust.
You're
right
not
there.
Gonna get any better than that.
I think you guys should put money on that at home. If I was a betting man, I'd put money on the Astros simply because of that.
I'm gonna put money on the Dodgers. They've lost the last two. There's no way they lose a third. Third time's the charm. You know the saying.
No, there's always that team throughout all of sports that gets this close and can just never seal the deal. And I think that's the Dodgers.
Really?
Yep.
You're going to call them the Buffalo Bills of baseball.
Yeah, they actually are. That's a perfect analysis. You know, I want to revisit something. You describing Please. This whole, you know, you were setting the scene for baseball, and you mentioned the wild card. And for some reason to me, the wild card game is just perfectly poetic. I really love it. It's you have this 162-game season.
It comes down to one game.
Everyone's, you know, battling. Each game is not that important, but, like, the long stretch of it's important. And then all of it, all those games come down to one game. I don't know. There's nowhere else in sports where you see that. It's beautiful. It's really fascinating to me.
Here's what we need to do. Let's get this straight right now. We're going to add two teams to Major League Baseball. We're going to have 32. We're going to make it a 32-team tournament.
Is this your plan?
This is my master plan for remaking baseball, so that's more interesting to a modern generation. We're going to add two teams. We're going to make it a 32-team playoff tournament. We're going to have, let's see, what would it be? I don't want to have seven-game series. We got to have longer than that to make it a little bit longer of a season, perhaps.
So you're saying you want to start the playoffs way earlier and have every single team be in the playoffs?
We're going to have 32 teams. Listen. We're gonna make it the NCAA tournament, but it's gonna be the MLB tournament. We're gonna have 32 teams. We're gonna have a series. We're just gonna work our way all the way through. We're gonna take a nice layoff, and then we're gonna wait till October to have the championship. It's gonna be good. I mean,
I see problems.
How about
with
that?
This.
I mean,
why try in the regular season?
There's not gonna be a regular season.
Oh, you're saying the whole season?
Yeah, the whole season is playoffs.
Wow.
Is that not – that's intuitive.
Wow, that is –
that's innovation that excites.
That is innovation that excites. I'm on board for this. You got to do something to make baseball more entertaining. So,
Rob Manfred, get on it. Clemson hot take on the other side of the break. This is the Trial Run Podcast. We got a Clemson hot take on the way, but first, your least favorite segment of the week, This Week in History. Take it away, Brennan Bevins.
All right, This Week in History in 1519, excuse me, 500 years ago today, actually, for those keeping count.
Very nice.
Ferdinand Magellan embarked from Spain on a voyage to circumnavigate the world.
Circumnavigate the globe.
Thank you for that, Jermaine.
Jermaine Cole, it's a cold world, baby. It's a cold world.
That was terrible.
That was just very good. That was excellent. Excellent work on your part. You picked the least interesting and the shortest This Week in History that you've ever had. And
oh, that's false. That's a very interesting fact. Circumnavigating the globe.
Okay, I need you to describe a few things to me. What is circumnavigating and who is Ferdinand Magellan?
Are you kidding me? Did you not have like fourth grade social studies?
I think I have a brief memory in the back of my head, but it's not going to be something that's going to come to the forefront.
All right, put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is not knowing what circumnavigate means mean you're not fit for the CMU Honors College?
Can you just tell me what it means instead of crucifying me, please?
It means going around the world. He went around the world. First person to ever do it. Yeah.
Jesus.
1519, that was 500 years ago.
I can do that.
Okay.
That ain't even that tough. Please. Give me a plane ticket and I'll go ape.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be easy.
I mean, then you could prove that the earth is not flat. So there you go.
That's 100% correct. Great job by you.
Or you could fall off the face of the earth. Who knows?
You never know.
You never know.
Right into the stratosphere. College football, we were going to recap week three, but that was just, you know, a dumpster fire.
I literally was trying to find something to talk about from last week in college football, and there's just nothing there.
Can you believe we're already this far into the season, though? It's a little bit depressing because
it's bittersweet.
It's bittersweet because we know how quick the season goes, and you know how much we love it, and then we have to wait until next September to get it all back again. So, you know, you got to enjoy every minute, which is why we'll be up. Per usual, 9 a.m. tomorrow, watching College Game Day.
Look for my story. You know I'll have a get up, it's game day.
Absolutely. But we'll be there. It's supposed to be like 80 degrees out tomorrow, sunshine, blue sky, but not like we'd know because we're going to be indoors all day.
Blinds drawn.
Yeah, blinds drawn in the dark. Just hold up watching college football
as God intended it.
Long. So I actually have no idea what this Clemson hot take is. So I'm just going to kind of let you do your thing, sit back, might do some push-ups, and kind of get set.
We know damn well you won't be doing push-ups. Anyway, here's my hot take. Big build-up for it, but
I mean, I've been talking you up all show.
So. Yeah, that's right. So what I think needs to happen is, since Clemson is in, I can say it, a garbage ACC, I think Clemson needs to be held to a higher standard. I think, at least for the foreseeable future, a one-loss Clemson team does not deserve to make the college football playoff. A one-loss Clemson team.
That's a good thing. They're not going to lose.
Right. That's my point. But if you look at it, a two-loss Michigan team or Ohio State team or basically any team even in the SEC, that's more impressive to me than a one-loss Clemson team. Just looking at Clemson's record. I think that if I'm the selection committee for the playoffs, Clemson loses a single game this season, a single one, they don't deserve to make the playoffs.
You get that off your chest?
I did get that. I mean,
the ACC is bad, yeah.
Do you agree? No, is that not fair?
It's fair. The ACC is down this year. It has no rank.
I mean, you look at...
It has Virginia. Is that their only ranked team right now? They have Virginia at number 20.
I don't even know if... Are they playing Virginia?
I have no idea.
I don't think they are.
I'm not up on my ACC.
No, in fact, I know that they aren't because... this is what made me come up with this take. Earlier this week, someone put on Twitter the top 10, how many ranked teams that each team in the top 10 is playing throughout the rest of the season. Clemson is not playing a single ranked team for the rest of the year. Obviously, that's subject to change, but...
Yeah, Syracuse was supposed to be the big test, and then we saw what happened to them.
Maryland, who was like, what, the 7th, 8th best team in the Big Ten,
and beat them? And who also just lost to Temple last week, yeah.
Right, so... I mean, they need to be held to a higher standard. You look at Oklahoma, you look at Michigan, you look at Ohio State, you look at Penn State, you look at, Georgia. All these teams are LSU. They're all playing at least 3-4 top 25 teams. And then Clemson over here is playing Little Sisters of the Deaf and Blind. So,
I mean, we kind of thought that North Carolina might be that team, might be that ranked team to kind of give them a run at the end of the season in the ACC. But, you know, we saw them lose last week to a Wake Forest team that's 3-0, which is are they the real deal apparently. Like, I don't know what's gonna happen with them, but I can't imagine that Wake Forest is gonna be ranked come the end of the season. So yeah, I don't think they're gonna be playing anybody else legitimate. It's a fair take that you're making.
Yeah,
I just wanna
damn right it is.
You know, I just wanna keep you in check, and I wanna let you get off without some counter arguments. So
there you go.
This week, speaking of the ACC. Our boys, our CMU Fighting Chippewas, they'll be heading down to ACC country and play the Miami Hurricanes. You know, the lesser known Miami. We play the real Miami every year.
Miami, Ohio, yeah. We give them the business, right, every year.
Any expectations? Are they going to be better or worse off than when they played Wisconsin?
I mean, you could hope that they would only go up from what they look like against Wisconsin, which means that they're going to win. So
yeah, 100%.
Central by 23.
I think the spread is 29.5. So you're taking a resounding outright win from CMU, mm-hmm, on that spread.
Yep, that would be a super dog pick actually, right? Yeah, there.
That better be reflected in your spreads in the spread pick this week.
Absolutely, you will see it there. Can't I'll get wait. A fat 5 points for that.
So let's quit pretending that you actually care about CMU and let's talk about the team that you really care about, the Michigan Wolverines.
Hell yeah. Big test.
Big test this week. They play Wisconsin in Madison at Camp Randall. It'll be rowdy. It'll be rocking. And Wisconsin's a favorite. And as it is well documented, your boy Jim Harbaugh has not beat a team that is favored against them. Is it on the road or is it at all?
At all.
At all. They haven't beat a ranked team.
0-6.
Have not beat a team that has been favored over them in the Jim Harbaugh era. What are your expectations for the game tomorrow besides the fact that you're going to wet yourself on our couch?
Well, I'll tell you what. I am petrified of this game, and I think that Michigan is going to lose. But I just had this revelation a couple minutes ago. I had this exact same feeling with the Wisconsin game last year. And that was Michigan's first real test of the season, apart from the Notre Dame game, which they lost. So coming off of that Notre Dame game, their first real test was Wisconsin. I was petrified for that game. Michigan ended up winning 38-7. I don't think that's going to happen again tomorrow. I really don't. However, I think Michigan has the capability to win this game, provided that they don't turn the ball over. They need to fix...
Have they shown that they can do that?
I think they need to fix a lot of things on offense. They do. But they don't... Those problems are exaggerated because of unforced or minimally forced turnovers. And I think if they can clean that up, they have a legitimate shot tomorrow against Wisconsin.
Well, I think they have a legitimate shot regardless.
I think that the problems are not as drastic as they appear.
Well, let me break this down for you. Football is a really simple game. You don't turn the ball over. You hold on to the football. That's just a basic rule for most games, really, is you hold on to the ball and you're going to win more.
That's correct.
And then on top of that, you need to out-tough the team that you're playing, and they did not show that against Army at all.
Well, Army's, I mean...
Or Middle Tennessee State, for that matter.
That's a more fair take.
They're winning games on raw talent alone, and they have nothing... They beat Army and Middle Tennessee State based on talent, not because they played a better football game than them.
If you want to have a poll, if there was a poll out there for the toughest team, most gumptionist team in America, Army would be number one in the nation.
Yeah, that's 100%. They got completely whipped by Army in every facet of the tough spectrum, of the gumption spectrum.
Yep. But my point in this turnover argument is that I don't know if the problems with Michigan are with the schematics. So I think that they're implementing their offense still, and it may not be exactly where Michigan fans want it to be, but it's much better. It's much improved. It just comes down to those turnovers, I think.
So what's your pick? I want to know. I want to know points. I want to know what your full-hearted pick is going to be for tomorrow.
I can't go against Michigan.
I know you can't, which is why I set you up so that when they lose, you're going
to
be devastated.
I'm going to say 17-13 Michigan.
Really? Low scoring?
Yes.
The Wisconsin offense has looked awfully good, and they have the best running back in the country on their team.
That is correct.
And you're still thinking Michigan's defense, which is not proven a whole lot yet, that they're going to hold Wisconsin to 13 points?
I'm thinking 17-13 Michigan.
Really?
Yep.
I hope it's 55-48.
As long as Michigan wins, I don't give a crap how wrong I am.
I really do. Is this a better game than Notre Dame versus Georgia?
That remains to be seen. We're going to learn a lot about Notre Dame this week.
Because I personally think it is, to be honest with you. I have no confidence in Notre Dame whatsoever. Georgia is, by my estimation, the third best team in the country right now. LSU may be better than them. I'm not sure, but regardless, they're a top four team in the country right now. And I don't think Notre Dame, what they showed against Louisville, was not impressive at all. They really haven't shown me a whole lot to base a solid argument for a good game off of yet. So I'm saying that Notre Dame traveling to Athens, I don't think it's going to be close. I really don't.
See, I think that that's a fair take, but I think that a lot of the negative bias that goes against Notre Dame is built up from just hearsay, from the press. And I think that everyone thinks that, you know, Georgia has all these recruits. They're an elite SEC team. So, of course, they're going to win at home against Notre Dame, which, in all honesty, I think they're going to as well.
In what facet is Notre Dame better at?
I'm not saying necessarily that they're better. I'm just saying that I don't think they're as bad as people paint them.
No, I don't think they're bad at all. But I think talent-wise, it's across the board. Are you going to take Ian Book or Jake Fromm head-to-head?
I mean, that's actually close. That is
really?
Yeah, that is close. Ian Book's a pretty good quarterback. But I mean, I probably...
At the end of the day, who do you take?
I'm probably taking Jake Fromm.
I'm taking Jake Fromm. I'm not saying that it's not close, but I'm going to say that I think it's a little bit the gap is a little bit bigger than you think it is.
I tell you what, though, the beauty about college football is the most talented team doesn't win on every given night.
No, that's true. But regardless, when you have potentially two NFL first rounders in DeAndre Swift and Jake Fromm on offense, I mean, that's an awful lot of ground to make up if you're Notre Dame.
I'm intrigued with this game. I'll say that much. I don't think that Notre Dame's going to win, but I'm more intrigued than other people seem to be.
I mean, personally, I'm pulling for Notre Dame big time. I hope they win this because...
Well, college game day.
Yeah, I hope Michigan and Notre Dame win out until we go to that game because I want college game day to be there. I want the setting to be as expansive as possible. So I'm actively rooting for both of them. I mean, until I see you squirming on the couch hoping that Michigan wins, that I might start rooting against Michigan a little bit just to see you writhe in agony. But other than that... Just in general, I'm rooting for them throughout the time that there is before we go to the game.
Well said.
Yeah, couldn't have said it better myself. Any other games that stand out to you this week?
You know, I'm looking right now. Auburn, Texas A&M, that'll be an interesting one. Bo Nix, we're going to see what he's really made of.
He's barely completed over 50% of his passes. He has not been everything that has been advertised so far. He played relatively well in the second half against Oregon, but outside of that, it's been
he really had that
fantastic.
He had that one throw against Oregon, and everyone lauded him with praise. And other than that, he hasn't really done much. So this is going to be a true test for him once more. I'm looking at SMU, TCU. SMU is off to a great start. First 3-0
start.
SMU's
a solid team. Absolutely.
Yeah, they have Shane Buechele, the transfer from Texas, who's a solid quarterback. And TCU is right there up in the top 25, so that should be an intriguing matchup, one that you know a lot of people won't be looking at. And then, you know, since I'm a Big Ten guy, I'm intrigued to see Northwestern Michigan State. That should be another slugfest battle.
That's a Big Ten game if you've ever heard
that
of
is
Big Ten
actually
game.
That just reminds me of like overcast skies, grass fields, you know, people are dirty and you know
Pat Fitzgerald and Mark D'Antonio just spitting at each other.
It's going to be like a lower scoring game than some baseball games. It should be a classic.
One game that I'm actually really interested in looking at this week is Cal going to Ole Miss, number 23 Cal, a ranked Cal team. You praised their defensive backfield last week. That's a game where Ole Miss is clearly on a down year. They're not even in the upper half of the SEC this year. And yet, I was surprised to find out today that Ole Miss is actually favored against Cal this week, I believe by 3 points.
That is interesting.
Which is very interesting to me. That tells me that Las Vegas has absolutely no respect for the Pac-12 at all. So a ranked Cal team going to a poor Ole Miss team on the road, and Vegas is going to give Ole Miss the nod. So I'm actually very intrigued to see if Cal shows up and if they can pull that out. And I want to see them do it in dominant fashion, to be honest with you, because I'd like the Pac-12 to be relevant, if at all possible. And then another game, I don't know why I'm intrigued by this, but Louisville, Florida State, Willie Taggart is pretty clearly going to get fired at the end of the year if he even makes it to that far. But I want to see what Louisville is built for, because we saw that they played relatively well against Notre Dame. And they're traveling to Tallahassee, which I don't care how bad Florida State is. If you're a rebuilding Louisville team, you want to go to a usually hostile environment and get a big win. So we'll see if they're capable of doing that.
You know, I actually have two more now that I think about it. I'm looking
Please share.
I will. Appalachian State, North Carolina. That actually is an intriguing matchup to me. North Carolina's coming off a loss, as we mentioned earlier in the show.
Yeah, Appalachian State has a rich history of upsetting teams on the road.
I don't want to talk about it, but they're a solid power or a group of five team, so look for that game. And then finally, Oklahoma State, Texas.
Oh, we saw what happened last year.
We saw what happened last year.
Mike Gundy, Tom Herman screaming at each other across the field. Oh, give me some more of that. Inject that directly into my veins.
You know that during commercial breaks at the Notre Dame-Georgia game, we'll for sure be tuning into that one.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to wrap up the show with the way we do it every week nowadays. Who's your daddy of the week? I'll let you go first. Go ahead, because this one that I'm reading on the sheet right now for you looks pretty intriguing to me.
I'm savoring this one. For my daddy of the week, I'm saying that mathematics is Michigan State's daddy of the week. We saw what happened against Arizona State in the final seconds where Michigan State seemingly won the game on a last-second field goal, but then ended up having it be reversed because Mark D'Antonio could not count to 11. He had 12 men on the field. Their kicker ran back out onto the field in girlish fashion and proceeded to absolutely wreck a 40-yard field goal and miss it by about 20 yards. So congratulations, Michigan State. Mathematics is your daddy of the week.
Yeah, my who's your daddy of the week? I had Aaron Donald's helmet over Drew Brees' hand, but I just want to make that a broader statement. I just want to say injuries are quarterbacks' daddies this week because we saw Drew Brees go down, we saw Big Ben go down, everybody's getting hurt and everybody is going to retire because of it. You heard it here first. Drew Brees, Ben Roethlisberger, done. You're finished
after the season. Wow. Ending it on a hot take.
How about that? I always stay strapped.
Stay strapped always.
How about that? This has been the Trial Run Podcast. Have a great one.